Okay. This is ESAC's Waste Diversion Collections and Education Subcommittee meeting. It is December 3rd. Hard to believe it's the last month of 2025. And I'd like to bring this meeting to order. Roll call, Fred Ariza.
Here.
Doug Jennings,
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter,
Here.
Chris Yarder present, and we're hoping that Margo Garcia is gonna show up as well. All right. No chairperson's report. Although I have a feeling that we're going to have a few questions for you before we end up before I end up putting something together to send to mayor and council. So we'll probably figure this stuff out as we go through the agenda. Item three, we're starting with the food cycle program. Oh, there's Margo. Hi, Margo.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi, Brittany. I shared the presentation with you. If you have it up, let me make you I changed the settings. I don't even think you I think you have the ability to share your screen. It says I'm disabled, but I did Oh. just forward it to you in an Uh-oh. email. Then I need to fix that for the future. Let me bring it up. Sorry.
Well, it's good to see you online. Just seeing your face when you show up, and when you're not showing your face. Sorry. Okay.
Didn't recognize Doug. Doug, you just get off a golf course?
He didn't recognize Doug.
No, I just came in from the shop, so I didn't have a chance to get cleaned up. So I just threw a hat on, and
Oh, we don't care about that,
I
especially
am.
on Zoom.
I don't
Okay, I'll get started, everyone. Just to give you a quick update on where we are with our Food Cycle at Home program, we have over 3,400 households participating in the program. We have diverted, since the program started last year, 150 tons of residential food waste. And we've distributed over 1,200 tons of compost and mulch. That has just really been booming lately. Last year, we distributed for the entire year 350 tons. So we're at over 750, I guess. We've more than doubled. And I know we have another large load going out this month. We are providing compost to so many entities now. The schools are interested in it. We have many, many schools that we deliver to who have compost, who have gardens, community gardens. We're delivering to the community gardens. The golf courses are now using our compost, as well as transportation and the parks. Everyone's been really pleased with our product. So we're happy to be getting more of our compost out to the community. In producing the compost, we've also diverted 2,800 tons of green waste that comes in through landscapers through the landfill, our sustainability campus. And we've also diverted 560 tons of Zoodoo that we use as manure in the mixture of our compost. One of the things we need to do is get the message out more about our food waste at home program. We have a great social media presence. We also partner with the Compost Cats, who put our events on their social media. And our participants are still high in our trainings. We do require everyone to go through training to ensure our contamination stays low. But next month, we will be promoting our Food Cycle at Home program in the water flyer. So I think that will hopefully bring a lot of interest out, as well as our recycle coach. We're working on adding it to our recycle coach. We started partnering with, well, we've partnered with the Compost Cats all along, but they started helping us with training this year. And it's really been a great resource. They have done so much to help our program, and we've been able to increase the number of trainings that we're providing to the public with the Compost Cats' help. Next flyer. Next slide. This is just a little image of how our compost food waste at home is increasing. We do have a small, you're probably all aware of, a small commercial food waste program, which provides a lot of the food waste we're collecting to use for our compost. But slowly, we're actually little by little, our food waste at home has jumped. And we started off, we were just a little bit over a ton, and now we're averaging about 10 tons a month. Next slide. We have added additional sites. When we started the program initially in January of last year, we had one site in each ward, six sites. We now have 16 drop-off sites. We just added, or in the process of adding, McCormick Community Gardens, which is at Columbus and Alvernon. They will kick off on Monday. Our goal is to have one site within any 2 mile radius within the city of Tucson.
I have a question.
Yes.
How do you actually find these sites? Do you make inquiries, or how is it that you guys determine where these sites are going to be located?
So we've been mapping the sites out, and some of it initially started off in community gardens. And some of the sites, when we partnered, when the University of Arizona partnered, combined their bucket program into our food waste at home program, they had two sites already in place. So we took over those sites as well for as a drop off. So you see around the university area, there's a few more sites there. Because we included the University of Arizona sites. But we do it based on a couple things. One, as I mentioned, we want to keep it within 2 mile radius, but also a usage. Some of the areas have very high usage, and some of the other areas we are trying to do more promotion are not used much. Like, for example, the TCB site on Valencia, very low usage at that location. We have Barrio Blue Moon, that's a site too behind Tucson House. We had a request for that, again, low usage. Some sites were requested specifically by mayor and or by council. The Ward 1 site, a council member asked us to put a drop-off site at her location. So we're trying to, depending on where we can establish a drop-off site, is there a garden in the area? Is there a city facility, a rec center? Then we will place a site there. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's based on really the proximity to city facilities or community gardens, as well as usage, the current usage of the sites in certain areas,
Well,
high volume usage.
how do you know if like, for instance, there's a I can see in Ward 2, there's only two places, Udall and the community garden there. But how can you tell if like I'm in the middle of all that, and I have to travel to Highland Vista to drop off my collection. What's the possibility of having it done at our park over here at Palo Verde? It would put it somewhere between 22nd and Broadway in Kolb area.
Certainly we can look at that. We always, during our trainings, we always ask participants to recommend new sites. So, and you're right, this is an area, I think, right in here where we need to add an additional site. But that certainly, I'm happy to look at that. So you're suggesting Palo Verde Park over there by Kolb?
I actually went over the site with one of the supervisors, and I suggested the south east corner of the park.
Okay.
It's there's a dirt area over there where people would just actually drive right up to it, and you wouldn't be in the way. You wouldn't be obstructing traffic unless you actually, did obstruct traffic. But there's a place there that you could do it, and there's a some ample shade for the summertime, and
Okay.
for the most part, anyway. But
No, and go ahead.
if you look at the southeast corner, that might be a good place.
Okay, I'll be happy to look there. I do agree with you. I think that's an area that we need to target a little bit more. So I'll be happy to look at that. And it's far enough, I think, both from Highland Vista, from Freedom, as well as Randolph Golf Course. So.
What about one in the Sabano area? Do you have one at the Sabano Park?
We have one at the Purple Heart Park,
Okay.
which is down lower.
I
That
can
would
see
be,
that.
yeah, that's the closest to Savano. I actually, when I did a training at Savano, I looked into putting a location around Savano. The fire station wouldn't work. And I asked if we put a drop-off site within Savano, if they would be open to making it public, and they would not. They didn't want residents to come into their streets within Savano. So the closest area at that point that we found was the Purple Heart Park.
Because they do have a community garden too.
I know, I do, but they did not want us to
Okay.
go. But we're happy to give them compost. And actually, Carlos and I did talk about that a little bit, whether we would want to provide them, because we all know they're so environmentally conscious. They
Yeah.
have, and in they when I did the training, they even talked about how the neighbors would get together and collect each other's compost and drop it off. But I will say Purple Heart is one of our low use sites, which I was surprised. But that's something maybe we could revisit doing it within Savano. The only thing is, that particular site, according to what Savano told me, wouldn't be open to the public.
Lisa, I have another observation. When I was over at Highland Vista, it looked like those containers hadn't been cleaned in a long time, and they were just kind of getting, pretty bad.
Yes, that is a challenge. We hired a company to come in, and they actually clean the containers on site. They isolate the water so none of it runs off. And right now, we just started it a few months ago. They are coming once a month. In the summer, we thought we would do it more often. There may be certain locations like the Highland Vista, especially, it's one of the high use areas that need to be done every 2 weeks. Our drivers who go out and dump do bring like a spray bottle and a rag. They try to keep it clean on the lid because we know people don't want to open the container with a dirty lid. So they do try to keep it clean. But that, I think, potentially at some of the high use sites, we need to look at having someone come out and clean probably twice a week or twice a month. It is challenging, I will say, because we really don't have a budget for this either. So we're trying to accommodate the program as best we can. But if we had more of a budget for our food waste at home program, that would be great. I will mention to you, I didn't bring up the map, but I can share it next time. We do map, we collect everyone's addresses, and we try to map where they're located within the city, which also has some impact on where we drop the sites off. Over 25%, I think it was 28% of the participants in this program are county residents. We're not preventing them from joining the program because that would be a very challenging thing for us to do. But we don't necessarily give them a little countertop bucket, but they do go through the training, and once they go through the training, they can participate in the program. And I try to encourage them to speak to the board of supervisors if we could possibly get some funding. We get requests to have drop-off sites way north outside of the city, and I do share with everyone that this is a city program. That they can participate, but that we have to keep all our collection points within the city of Tucson. But that 28%, that's a high number of county residents participating in it. Next slide. Here's just a recap of those locations that we have currently. I also wanted to share with you that we received a $368,000 grant from USDA, and we're partnering with TUSD and Ishkashita on this grant. It is really to work with the schools to divert materials. Within each school, we have 10 schools that are participating in the grant, and we're going to be working with the Compost Cats too, who this is a second part of the grant that TUSD did. We weren't a part of the first grant, but this is a second grant that's they received, or we that was part of TUSD. And Compost Cats, from what I understand, helped them with the first part of the grant. They'll be working with us on this grant to educate students as to what materials they can divert to promote sustainable practices, and also to establish new community gardens within the schools. Next slide. We had a kickoff event last week, and it was really a great turnout. Superintendent Trujillo was there, the mayor was there, we had Ishkashita speak, and we had some students there, and then they did a tour. This was held at Monzo, and they have a great location out there. Moses Thompson, who works now with the University of Arizona and also supports TUSD, did a great job to establish their gardens at Monzo. And they are working with us together to develop these new sites. And next slide. Along with working with the students, we're also going to be doing training for families within these schools to introduce them to our food waste at home program. And this was more of the event we had. And next slide. Oh, one more slide the other way. And the mayor was there too. Oh, she spoke as well. And that's the end of my presentation. Any questions?
Good job. A lot of good info.
Thank you.
Yeah. What kind of tonnage again?
So right now, I think we have over 115 residential tons. It's gone from about 1 ton now to we're averaging about 10 tons a month. Our commercial program since last year has taken in over 500 tons. So that's still where the bulk of our food waste is coming from. But slowly, the food waste at home program. I will tell you, the public is still so excited about this. Every time we do trainings, you know, I mentioned this last time. So often when we do public meetings, you know, we're lucky to have 6 people, 10 people. I still have a room full of people. When we do our trainings at the zoo, which we're doing in January, we'll have over 100 people. And people are excited. You know, they know it's a volunteer program, and they clap for us. You know, they are so appreciative. We did one, the Palo Verde neighborhood too, and that went well. And everyone is just so excited about the program. I think the big task is to get the message out to more people.
How does that work with the Compost Cats? Are you delivering to their site, or is it all coming to the cities?
So we have containers at the at the university community gardens and their site on Roger Road too. In fact, they have numerous containers at their sites. We bring the containers, we collect the food waste that's collected. And I will say the Compost Cats too, I didn't mention, they are crucial in this program. They go out and they not only audit our commercial customers. And when I say audit, it's a positive thing. It's to work with them to ensure that the right materials are going into their bins, and to try to lower our contamination. Our contamination still in our food waste, both our commercial and especially our food waste at home, is nil. I mean, I think the training classes for the food waste at home have just been instrumental in keeping the contamination low. But we have containers at the site, and we pick up the food waste, and the Compost Cats also work to audit those containers as well. They go around to our food waste at home sites and audit to see what kind of materials. They take pictures Kudos to our drivers too, our food waste at home drivers. It's not just dumping. They go out and they open each bin. Each bin has a lock because when you go through the training, you receive the combination to those bins. They open the each bin. They look at the fullness of the container because we're trying to report the weight. Even though it's collected at the landfill, we're trying to assess each site to see what the weight is. They open each container. They take pictures. They try to wash off the top of the containers. They take pictures of the contamination. That's what I started to say. We have a newsletter that goes out every 2 weeks to all the participants. And within the newsletter, we share where we're going to drop compost because we also provide it to the participants. We drop it at the ward offices, at parks, and they can come and pick up free compost. We talk about contamination, a particular site. And that's something I've found with the participants of the program, they really care and they want to know about their site. Is our site doing okay? Are we getting contamination? So if there is any contamination, we share those photos. And then we share any information about the program changes, new sites, etc.
So the city collects for the university, and then that goes to the compost cat site.
Correct.
Gotcha.
That goes to our gardens, I mean, to our compost facility, and then whatever compost the compost cats needs, we return back to them for free.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Good.
any right now, all our compost and mulch is free. We aren't charging for any of it. So whatever the compost cats, certainly they're crucial in our program. We share that with them, as well as the other community gardens who are our partners, and then schools, etc.
Thank you.
And this is one of our drop-off sites. Our container maintenance group actually made this enclosure. They've been making other enclosures. I also purchased three enclosures that have a push-button combination. We'll try to see how those go. I will say they were costly. They were like $2,500 an enclosure, where our staff, if they have time, can make these enclosures for a lot less. But these are the bins. Those are the locks that the participants receive combinations to when they go through the training. And I think this is Highland Vista. That first one, I think, was Highland Vista. This might be Iron Horse. So, and these are the bins, the countertop bins that we provide to the participants of the program. But they can use any size bin they choose. We just caution them because food waste gets very heavy, you know, as it starts to break down. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank
thank you.
you.
Thank you so much.
I guess I have
Trevor,
a quick
you were
question.
okay, go ahead.
Just a quick question. How often do you think people empty their bins? Do you have any ideas? That once a week, every 2 weeks, once a month?
It depends on the individual. I think people tend to go every couple weeks. I think one of the challenges too is odor. You know, we provide some suggestions to participants, anything from using baking soda, which I learned from the compost cats, and also coffee grinds. I personally put mine in the freezer and I put it in a bag. Of course, they can't put the bag in the compost and then it drops out like an ice cube, but putting it in the freezer helps to you have no odors at all. People use the 5 gallon buckets. Like the paint comes in, you get at Home Depot with a lid. So I would say about every 2 weeks, but it really depends on the individual.
We do the same thing. We do the we put it in the plastic bag and stick it in the freezer. It's much easier. It's like you said, it doesn't smell bad at all. And I find that we end up collecting more because the container is too small for the amount of stuff that we end up taking to the facility.
Oh, very true. And it was only meant to be a little countertop container. You know, we just wanted to provide something to the community. Down the road, who knows, we may change that. Maybe we offer a 5 gallon for a little cost. I know the compost cats had a larger container, didn't you, Trevor?
Yeah, we had 2 gallon buckets with like a Gamma Seal lid because smells. If you ask Kenzie, who's on my team, I was probably the worst offender for a really long time of like just letting I would keep my bucket outside, and during summer I would keep it in direct sunlight unintentionally, and it would become truly awful.
But we also offered 5 gallon buckets as well. And I think with the Gamma Seal, the 5 gallon bucket was like $20 or something. And I think cost was like 15.
Maybe that's something we might consider down the road too.
In that respect, I have a brand new container that we never really use. Would you like it to bring it back sometime or
Sure.
use it?
We have some people who have said they're not using their small countertop. If you run into any of us, we're directing participants to drop them off at the ward office. Every
Okay.
so often, we will pick up one from the ward office.
Okay, that's a good place to put it then. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
All
And
right.
Trevor, you work with the compost cats directly, don't you?
Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
program of the Office
With
of
your
Sustainability.
right. Okay, that's what I thought.
Trevor's the king composter. He's the king of the compost cats.
Oh, gosh.
Well,
Well, that's high
this is so
praise.
exciting because I remember when compost cats were out at Santa Vere, and so this whole program going on with Los Reales and everything is just great. It's perfect.
I think I can speak for myself, Lisa, Pat, and Frank, and I'll say it's so much better at Los Reales than San Javier.
Yeah.
But you know, kudos, and I mentioned this at all the trainings, kudos to the compost cats. I mean, they started something that we needed a long time, and it was their efforts that I think got things going.
Totally.
Awesome. We like good news. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Item four. Pat, you're up for deputy director's report.
So mine is going to be short because I'm actually going to be with you guys next week. Carlos is actually on vacation for 2 weeks, so he will not be back until 15th. So I'll be at the full ESAC next Thursday.
Okay.
So just a short, just to let you guys know, there is a memo that's being prepared to go to mayor and council. It's supposed to be going to mayor and council by the 16th,
Yes.
and that's all the departments. Carlos may have mentioned it already, and you guys are aware of it, and I'm maybe just repeating it again. But it's a memo that's being prepared by four departments that are all going out for fees. So you got transportation, you have water, you have parks and recs, and environmental services. So we all put together a portion of this memo that will be going to Mayor Council on 16th with our recommendations as to what our recommended rates would be. Most of us have done a cost of service study, which we were kind of really finalizing that. And I appreciate you guys. I think you guys also either put a sentence or some little notation in there saying your recommendations as far as the ESAC committee also following the
I'm
recommendations.
working
So
on it.
you're working on that. Okay. So
Yeah,
that would
yeah.
probably be a follow-up, I
So
think.
I'll send it to
From
Tim too, right?
okay.
It goes to Tim and Mayor and Council. So
Correct.
that's what we
So
did in the past.
So that's pretty much it at this point. I'll keep it short and sweet.
Okay. Oh, wait, I wanted to ask you something real quick.
Oh, time's up.
I'm sorry. No, you mentioned you know at the finance meeting you mentioned, well, we're getting a lot of the vehicles showing up in January. What when were those ordered?
Actually, in 2023 was where they started the orders. So
Yeah, okay.
they're almost 2 years behind. We are
Right.
starting, they are starting to roll in now.
Okay.
So we've already seen, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. Maybe Jose might have that for you, but we've
Yeah.
already seen a couple of front loaders and side loaders come in. So our goal is to have them all, and it's 18 side loaders. We should have all those by the end of January is the goal.
Okay,
Does
so
that
that's,
mean?
I mean, that's been a chronic problem is having to wait so long, probably what, due to COVID and
Now, you know
other,
what? To be
no?
honest with you, I think it was just a vendor being kind of
Oh.
picky on some of their stuff is what they're doing. Because it was COVID was a reason at one point when we were waiting for microchips and all that was causing some problems. This one actually, we sat down, met with the vendor. They gave us a reason as to why they were taking long because really there was a a pump issue and they weren't happy with it. They're being very critical because it was being put on their piece of equipment and they didn't want their equipment being sold or used without a good pump. But that being said, the pump could still be used. It may not just have been to the manufacturer's spec. So really, we could have got these and they could have swapped them out, which we found out after the fact. But unfortunately, so we've put a little bit of pressure over the last probably month on we need to get these trucks in. So the manufacturer that's working through Scorpion, which is GH, they're the ones that actually build the bodies, are getting those built as quick as possible. So they moved all our products, all our trucks to the top of the line to get this order completed.
Okay, because that's been a problem.
It has, and it shouldn't be. To be honest with you, now we're at the point now where if we place an order, we should start seeing those trucks within 10 to 11 months. We used to be able to get these within the same fiscal year when we ordered them. That's why we would order July 1 to have them by the end of that fiscal year. I think we're going to be able to get back to that point, but that's not going to be effective until July of 2026.
Okay. All right. And what about our electric trash truck?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask about that.
Sorry.
It's actually got sent back to the manufacturers. They took it back and they are working on it to try to fix it and get it back to us. We're hearing possibly February that we'll see it back in Tucson.
Okay.
Did they say which February?
Good point. Alfred, that's why I always appreciate the way you listen to these because no. To answer your question, no, they will not specify what year.
Okay.
And just to add on for on Pat's, we according to our the dashboard that we have with VT, we should be seeing what was it 12, 13, 9, 12 tr trucks that should be coming in, and the last one's going to be delivered on 2/6. So we should be seeing those here coming in pretty quick.
Good. Good to hear that.
Thanks, Jose.
Okay. And Pat, I guess, yeah, thanks.
Yep.
All right. And we'll see you at
I'll have more
ESAC.
to share with you next week.
Yeah. We'll see you at ESAC. All right. Let's move on to the MRF report, item 5. Christina.
Hello. Let me share my screen.
I'm sorry I missed that presentation, Monzo. I really wanted to go, but
Yeah, it was very nice. It
yeah,
turned out really well.
looked really cool.
So same thing we've been seeing, the PET is still at $20. Not sure, what's going to happen with that just yet. Looks like most of the commodities dropped a little bit. One piece of very, very good news, we had our audit finally because we hadn't been doing one all year. And we had it, and our contamination rate was 16.8%,
Wow.
Yeah.
down from 19.6. So 19.3 is the point at which we start paying. So on the next report, we should be able to see that no residue, excess residue charges.
Perfect.
So,
When we were having close to 30% contamination, was that all our fault? Or is
we
it could it have been equipment at the MRF?
well, okay. So, what I
what
was going to
changed? I
say,
was going to say, I'll answer that. No.
so when Steve was at the audit, he said, "Oh, so it's really getting cleaner." And the person there said, no, it's the equipment that we put in.
Okay,
So
I wonder about
basically,
that.
Pat and I are saying, okay, so all this time it's been cleaner and you guys have been throwing away good recyclables.
What equipment did they put in?
No,
Just the
it's a
optical
new
sorter for
sorter.
the
A new sorter, yeah.
So, yeah, so, but yes, coming down from 30% to 16.8, that's definitely because people are doing better.
Good.
But, we probably could have been doing better a little sooner with the new equipment,
With the
but
new sorter.
yeah.
I wondered about that.
Well, it was interesting. So Pat and I were talking about it and just said, yeah, so basically all these months you've been not capturing all the good recyclables.
And
You've been cheating us.
you sampled the
Exactly.
same amount.
Yeah.
Was that four trucks per day or something?
It's 5 trucks per day.
5 trucks per day. By the looks of it, it looks like Tuesdays and Thursdays material only. That's the cleanest.
It is. It is.
I
We
wonder what they put
know that.
in.
Pardon?
I'm gonna make a call over there and see what kind of equipment they put in that improved it so well.
Well,
I'm curious.
so yeah, it's but the definitely the Tuesday and Thursday collection areas are more. See, we see a lot less contamination. The Monday area includes like the U of A area. That's always been a challenge.
Your
Friday.
left side routes, those are
Yeah.
a challenge too. That's Friday's
Yeah.
material.
Yeah, Friday's bad. So,
Mondays and Fridays are bad.
well, Monday is average, but it's
Yeah.
because like you have really nice, you have areas where there's a lot of homeowners and typically in areas where where people own the homes, we see better participation, better attention to the contamination. But it also includes the U of A area. And unfortunately, when people are coming from other places, they don't always check to see what the rules are, and then, students, who knows? We see issues
And
with
Monday's my
trash.
neighborhood with
Monday is my
high
neighborhood.
rentals. Yeah, high rentals in
And
my
when you have
neighborhood.
high rentals.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
but
I
yeah,
think
I need.
Tuesdays and Thursdays are mostly the east side, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I live at Broadway and Camino Seco, and I'm Thursday. I know Fred's Thursday because that's the area where my dad lived. And then Lisa lives like northeast. So the far east is Tuesday, and then the kind of mid east is Thursday.
Yeah. And like you said, wherever there's a lot more apartment buildings, it kind of pushes up the contamination rate a little bit.
Yeah. Contamination just it seems to be with apartments or rental properties.
I always wish I had like a sticker that told about the app, online app. So to
Well, we are
put on the
with the
trash can.
route where we are able to take pictures. And the drivers will not service them if they see obvious contamination.
Good.
And then the residents will get a letter. Or they'll call and say, how come my recycling wasn't picked up? And the person can look and say, well, you had contamination. If you take it out, we will come back.
Okay.
But so, I mean, there's more opportunity for us to catch that stuff than before with, trying to send people out.
Good.
I have a quick thought. Well, I'm not quite sure what to. I'm just going to say something. Is it? Don't they realize that the consequences for doing something like that were the were we are charged for having all these things that they're put in there that even if they know it's not supposed to go in there, don't they understand the consequences behind that?
No, they
No,
know.
we've
And
talked.
there was a report that was done by the Recycling Partnership looking at participation rates and contamination. And they basically said that you have three groups of people participating. There's the eco warriors, that they're going to be the ones, those are the people that Lisa's getting to do the food waste.
Right.
They want to do everything right. They want to do everything they can to be, environmental stewards. They will do whatever you ask them to do. Then you have the middle area, which is probably 60% of the people, and or 50. And they'll do it if it's convenient. They'll do it if it's they're more susceptible to like peer pressure. So if they see their neighbors doing it, then they want to follow suit. And then there's the 20 or 25% of the people who don't care, and they're never going to do it right, no matter what. And I would say those are the people we'd like to get out of the program.
And what came up at our ESAC meeting was some of our members wondered if we'd be heading to zero waste quicker if there were less charges on the smaller barrels. But then Doug, I'm glad you stepped up and said, well, when the little barrels are full, then they just throw their trash in the recycle bin. So,
Yeah. And then when Seattle did that, they were one of the first ones to do the pay-as-you-throw. There was such a thing as the Seattle stomp. They would stamp down all their trash so it would fit, and then it wouldn't easily come out of the bin when it was serviced. So you're always going to have people that are going to try and get around that. I mean, Carlos is, we've had many conversations, and we do believe that, by being able to maybe start doing a curbside green waste and food waste collection, that's going to get us closer to zero waste, than anything. So,
Well, we're getting there.
yes, we are.
Thank you. Let's move on to item six and landfill and compliance. And where's Frank? There he is.
Can you
Hi.
hear me?
Yes.
Brittany, I sent you the files. That's my
Yeah,
share.
I'm pulling it up. Is it just the one PDF? Oh, there's four PDFs in the one. Okay.
So actually, I won't talk about that first. I'm just going to talk about bifusion quickly. There's not a whole lot of updates. Just want to let you know construction is, of course, still moving forward. We're looking at completion January, February, possibly.
Okay.
We don't have any picture because not much has changed since the last time. So, but no issues. We haven't seen anything that's going to delay the schedule. If you have any specific questions, you can ask.
Are they
Glad it's going up.
are is the bifusion knows when they can start delivering their equipment to install?
No, that hasn't been shared at the meetings yet,
Okay.
construction meetings. But I would imagine that it would have to be after the building has been released,
Okay.
the tenant improvements start. So I figure February, March at the earliest. And that's just my estimation.
Well, we have a well, we have an ESAC meeting down there to see it.
We can.
Good question. So I'm gonna send out a survey, and this is gonna be on full ESAC to talk about in-person meetings. So that is a thought for a future location for an in-person meeting.
Thank you.
Sounds like a party. Right.
So I'll move on to talk about the Silver Bell treatment system, which is a pump and treat system. We're pumping the contaminated raw water, passing it through activated carbon, removing the contaminants, and then feeding that water to the recharge facilities, the Silver Bell recharge facilities. So this, I just wanted to show you this figure. You can scroll a little down, Brittany, down to, so we can just show the yellow circles.
Oh, okay.
And then it gives you a legend of what we got here. So the yellow circles are the PCE concentrations, and those are predominant what we're treating. We're treating PCE and TCE. However, PCE is the one that mostly of concern. And you can see that the outer yellow is at 5, and that is the regulatory limit, 5 parts per million. And as you get closer towards the extraction rounds, you can see extraction well 12 is almost right in the middle, and extraction well 11, which has, it's like a half green and half white circles. And further north, you see extraction well 13 up towards the top. So those are the three extraction wells. And just to give you a few numbers, we've already extracted and removed almost 1,000 pounds of contaminants, which would be PCE, TCE, and some of the other residual VOCs. We've treated about 2.2 billion gallons since 2020, since we started. That's been with a B. So the facility started in April of 2020. If you scroll down to the next figure, Brittany, this just shows what the groundwater looks like because of the extraction wells. You can see that the extraction wells have the blue circle around them. That just shows that we're bringing in the groundwater and extracting it up to the treatment facility. But groundwater predominantly does move towards the northwest in this area. And then scroll to the next one. And this just shows the total, as you can see, the increase of removal that we've been able to accomplish. PCE are the black dots, and it keeps increasing with time. TCE is towards the bottom, which are the clear circles. And the total, of course, is on the top. Any questions?
Okay, so it's cumulative mass removal, right? So that's why it keeps going up. That's the total that you've removed.
Yes.
Yeah, cumulative total. Okay.
As I mentioned, we're almost 1,000 pounds.
That's great. Any other questions for Frank on this?
How long is it going to continue running?
It's going to continue running until we show that we've reduced below 5 parts per million completely throughout the sites, and our groundwater monitoring wells show below 5, and we can sustain that. Then we can go back to 8 if we find that we've remediated the groundwater and we're not getting any more contaminants above 5. Then there'll be a period of where we're just monitoring to see if we get any rebound. After that, we may continue to, most likely we'll be required to continue to monitor for an extended period of time. And if we do get rebound and we get anything back above 5, then we would have to restart the system.
Any estimate on the timeline for this when we might get below? I mean, there's still an area that was 50.
Yes, so it's going to go on for quite a long time. Just to give you here at Los Reales, the system has been running for almost 30 years, definitely over 25 years, and so it's going to be long term.
But there was the new setup that we went to,
This
right?
in reference to what?
What was I thought that was in 2020 when,
Yes, we visited
yeah,
the
we visited
opening.
when it, yeah, when it opened, and
Oh,
then
yeah.
we drove around the property and got to see all the different locations and stuff.
Yes, you did.
Okay. But
Right.
it had been going on longer.
Continuing. Oh, the Los Reales one is the one that's, are you talking about, or are you talking about this one?
So this one has it started in April of 2020, and I think
28.
that's when you visited the site. Before that, we didn't have a treatment system. We were just monitoring and we were working on, and then of course the construction.
Any other questions for Frank?
So let me update you on
Oh,
Silver.
okay. Go for it.
Unless there's other questions on Silver Bell, but if you scroll down to the next one, Brittany, I think you shut it down. And I just want to explain a little bit about the Silver Croft, which is what Kinder Morgan, the Kinder Morgan spill. And this one, you might want to scroll a little higher. Okay, just so we can show the entire area. So this is the MTBE and benzene, the benzene plumes from the Kinder Morgan release. And if you remember that they started a sparge system, which is basically just installed a row of wells, which is on the top edge of the two plumes, the green delineation and the red one. And basically all that was is that they are injecting air into the groundwater, and that helps decompose the MTBE. So it just basically feeds the microbes and they start breaking down the contaminant. It has actually been very successful, and the plume is not moving. And so as the groundwater moves towards the sparge system, it's gonna, and the theory is that it's all gonna be broken down. And then from the city's perspective, we were always concerned that that plume, the MTBE and benzene, would combine with the Silver Bell. And of course, great issues because our treatment system is not set up to treat MTD. So, and that's why ADAQ required Silver Bell, Kinder Morgan to install the SPIRE system, which is working out at this point. Again, this one is going to go on for quite some time as well. We don't know exactly how many years. What at the last meeting that I had with ADEQ, we do every 6 months, we actually meet and give ADEQ an update. And there's representatives from Kinder Morgan, Arcadis, which is their consultant. And from our end, we've got ourselves, and then we have GHD that does a groundwater monitoring, and then Geosyntec that runs our pump and treat system. So at that meeting, we had Arcadis notify ADEQ that they're going to be proposing to abandon some of their wells. If you look towards the bottom, you see all the little yellow circles, which is a lot of the monitoring wells. So they'll be proposing to abandon those once they get non-detect levels when they do their sounding. It's going to take a while because it will be an expense. So they'll gradually start abandoning all those wells since they don't need them anymore. That's all I have. There's any questions?
Anyone?
So the wells you're looking at abandoning are the ones at the bottom of the page, which are in the housing areas. And so how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. You
There's
were
quite a
looking at 20 wells, maybe?
possibly.
Yeah, those down there.
Really did a little bit of zoom. Yeah, roughly 20 plus.
Okay. And to abandon them means that they pull the equipment and cap them?
Yeah, so these monitoring wells are going to pull all the equipment. If there's anything in there, if these have pumps, I'm not sure if they sample with pumps or they sample with hydro sieves, which is basically or bales.
Yeah.
But once each one of these wells starts gets a non-detect, which is no detection of benzene or MTB, then they would abandon those. And what they do is they get filled in with bentonite, which is almost like a concrete material that
Right.
so they do get sealed, they get plugged up, and then they do get cut about 4 feet underground and then filled in. And basically there's a required procedure that ADWR has provided so that they don't get a breach into the groundwater in the future, basically.
Yeah, because that's what you don't want is something then being spilt on the top again that goes into the groundwater directly. So the bentonite should certainly stop that.
Yes. All of these are in right of ways. I don't believe any of these would be in private properties. Although
Well,
there are a few,
there are a few that look
I
awfully close to houses, but I don't know. Yeah.
the red star is where the actual spill.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you
All
for
right.
that update. Yeah. Okay, item 7, public outreach update. Christina, you're finishing the year here, huh? With tree cycle.
Yes. So, have any of you gotten your brush and bulky packets?
Yes.
So we decided to send everything out instead of putting it in bills, because we heard from a lot of people that said we don't see it because we get paperless bills. Even though they do get the attachments, they don't read them. So we thought sending everything in one packet
At all. I'll look at it
would
later.
really be helpful. So, seeing everything, we made some changes, updated some stuff, but there you have it.
It
That
looked,
was a big process.
yes, it looks like a horrendous process. It came out very nicely. I've already got the sticker on my refrigerator covering up the old sticker, and the graphics were very attractive. That was a nice job.
So thank you. We were really pretty happy with everything. Yes, so we had the event last week at Monzo, which was great. Really, really good turnout, and it was very nice having the kids around. So that went really well. We don't really have any s events coming up. I do have a neighborhood meeting tonight. But and we have a couple more starting in the new year. And we'll continue that for as long as people want us to come out. But we really don't have any special events coming up. Tree Cycle, our Ernesto's already gone out and delivered posters and the pads over to all the tree lots. He said that some of them, like right before Thanksgiving, they had already sold out their trees. He said there were at least two of them.
Really? That's hard to believe. They must have been awfully small.
Going to be one dry tree by the end of December.
But they went up early, or I think, or am I imagining that? It made me panic when I saw them.
Yeah, but that will start, the day after Christmas, and of course we'll have people there before, so we always
Wait a
do.
minute. A Christmas tree and they're abandoning it before Christmas, huh?
Yes, they do. Sometimes it's because people, they're going out of town, and so they
Yeah,
don't
they have an
want
early Christmas.
to. So yeah, that's pretty much what we've had.
Well,
The,
it's
you
been a
know,
busy
oh,
year.
and then the zero waste event. So we had 505 cars come through. They got more than 100 bikes.
I saw that. I
People
could not
drop their
believe
bikes.
all the bikes that were there. It was amazing.
So we give them to El Grupo, and then the ones that are not functioning go to Bikus because they use the parts. But Steve had talked to a neighborhood association, National City Neighborhood, and they had asked if, if the city ever got bikes that, because they have a list of kids who want them and they're going to fix them up for Christmas for the kids. So El Grupo gave some of the bikes collected to National City. So that was a
Oh,
nice thing.
nice.
But they did. They had a lot of bikes. So.
It was well organized, well run. It flowed smoothly. Nice to have someone at the end saying so long.
Yeah, no, it went well. So we
I
did add the Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank, and they got a lot of stuff.
Oh, good.
And WeCare was there to collect the medical equipment. They got tons. They got a couple of the really big electric wheelchairs. So they were pretty happy too for the first timers.
Christina, how many bikes again did you get?
Over 100.
And I was sorry that I hadn't noticed well enough in the advertisement that old eyeglasses would be taken. And so my box of eyeglasses is sitting waiting for the next time. So.
Well, at Lions Club, and I think they Lions Club has bins at like at optometrists.
I have not seen them. They used to do it at Tucson, at no, at St. Joseph's Hospital. I know many years ago I took them there, but
There's
yeah.
a place right there at Park Mall.
Oh,
It's
okay.
just on the east end of the mall. It's an eye place that they
Yeah.
came the last time I went there, so.
Oh, okay.
It said that Walmart vision centers usually have them.
Take them too.
Yeah, they do that too. I was in
But
the same boat.
and they go to Lions.
They go to Lions. Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
I felt like I was Red Fox there for a while. I had so many glasses in a drawer.
Yes, I opened up one of my husband's desk drawers and there were about six pairs of glasses in there. So, yes.
Margo, on their
Yeah.
website, they have a list.
Oh,
And
okay.
apparently, they have them like at most of the public libraries as well.
Okay.
Oh,
Thank you
that's
for
good to
telling me
know.
that all.
So,
Anyway, there was so
yeah,
many.
because,
Go ahead.
because really the whole point of the event is, yes, it's convenient to have one day, but all of the organizations are collecting year round. And so, we want people to know that, they don't have to wait. They can, just see where these organizations are and when they're open. So that's it.
Good news.
Good news, yeah.
Christina, I forgot when they arrive to those events, do they are they given a list of the participants and where they could be dropped off outside of that event?
We have everything. We have links to all of the organizations from the website. We really, really avoid handing out paper because it's zero waste. We have signs that have the QR codes that will take them to the website.
Okay.
And El Grupo was handing it out because I talked to them about some bikes, so.
Yeah. We discourage it. We don't
Yeah.
want, to be that.
Good idea.
But yeah, I mean, I can't really tell them not to, so.
Great.
Cool. Well, thank you,
Yeah.
Christina.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah,
Thank you.
it's almost the end of the year, and then you got to start all over again. So you're busy, busy for sure. Thanks.
No parade of lights this year.
There wasn't?
I thought they're
Oh.
having it, but we haven't
Yeah.
participated for a few years
A
now.
couple of years, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on and let's go to collections. If Jose's still here.
Yeah, he's here still.
There he is. I know. We saw you at the beginning and
Sorry about that. Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just threw me out. Was I up next?
Yeah.
Okay,
You're
well,
on. You're on for alley maintenance and recruitments. I'm anxious to hear what's going on.
all righty. Brittany, if you want to bring up that PDF for the 2024.
Can you see it?
Yes. Yeah, so I know that we've been talking over about this since last year, the alley vegetation. As you guys all recall, last year, we went out, which is going to be the supervisors, employees that reported some of the alleys that were unsafe. So we went out there and what you're seeing right now on the map is if it was green, it was a safe valley, and then the maintenance is going to be they needed some type of maintenance, whether it's vegetation, cut down some trees, and then the unsafe valleys. So for the safe valleys, we had 11,159 households that we went through, and we identified that that these alleys were safe. They did not need any type of work. And then for the maintenance part, we had 15,801 households that needed some type of maintenance, whether it's trimming down the trees or vegetation around gas meters, water meters, so that way the operators and the drivers had that visibility that they're able to see that. And then we identified unsafe valleys, which means trees or whether it's the alley way itself, the roadway needed to be fixed, or the alley's too small. There was, we identified all those. If you look down at the bottom, it says alley to curb conversion. So before we even started the survey, we had already done over 3,000 households that we were working on. And I'm not sure if you're able to see it, but you'll see a couple of marks where they look like alleys, but they're in black. Those were converted from 2020 to 2024 to December. We had already been converting, before we even did the survey. So during this whole year, we've been going out there. We do have one crew, the arborist crew, is here with the city of Tucson. They started working on some of these alleys. We have two vendors that we're using at this time, going out there, setting those guys up with tablets, with just so we can keep track of how we're cleaning up the these alleyways. But every single one of those, everything that you see that's either green, yellow, or red, those are all alleyways. All of it is just alleyways. So like I said, everything in yellow, we need to do some type of work in there. If you go to the 2025, Brittany. You'll be able to hear what you're seeing is that are you guys able to see that, everyone? Yeah, so if you go from the 2024 to the 2025, you can see the difference of what we've done this year. Do you want to zoom out a little bit, Brittany? That way they can see the big picture. So most of the work that needed to be done is going to be over on the east side, because that's the one that we were having a lot of issues, for the unsafe valleys. But if you can tell though, over the whole year, this is the work that we've done. Everything that's in green is now safe. We're able to go in there, no issues. There is a couple of alleys. We're hoping to get these done by the end of January. But the majority of the big alleys that we had that were unsafe, those are pretty much converted. So they went from alley to curb. And we're moving along. We're hoping, well, not hoping, I'm sure that we're going to get everything done and completed by the end of February. One of the things that we're working on now is like, okay, how are we going to, and when I say converted, it's just going to be the ones that are unsafe. Those are the ones. Going back to the yellow and some of the green, even though they're green, stuff is going to grow. We're trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to go back and how are we going to start working on some of those alleys that, because the vegetation is going to keep growing. So we got a lot of work ahead of us when it comes down to, maintaining the vegetation. But yeah, all those ones that you see in red, they're little small alleys. We took care of all the big ones, but we're heading in the right direction. I don't know if you're able to see the numbers on those. If you can zoom out.
You need some sheep herders.
Yeah, right. If you know of any, let us know, because yeah, we could use them. We could use them out there in a couple
Yeah,
of those alleys.
really.
Yeah, so we are working, along with the vendors and the city of Tucson arborists, where every day, we have these guys out there and working on these alleys. But we're moving along. Hopefully, like I said, vegetation, I don't think that's ever going to end. But when it comes to the unsafe alleys, we should have all those cleaned up by the end of February.
That's great. Wasn't that supposed to be a code violation for people to clean up their alleys?
It
It just
is,
never got
but
taken care of, right?
yeah, but it's one of those things. We took the initiative just to go out there, let's clean these up. And because a lot of people, yeah, they were cleaning up around, just their backyard, but they weren't actually trimming the trees. So one of the things that we've done is, when we identify, a certain alley that needs to get trimmed, we send out letters. We send out letters 2 weeks before we even arrive there, so that way they're aware, and it gives them time to also, if they don't want us to touch the trees, they're going to do it themselves.
Okay.
And if nothing is done, then that's when we go in, and that's we do our trimming out there.
Okay.
And
That's great.
then yeah, we're moving along. Yeah, we're moving forward. So hopefully the next one that we have, or any updates that I have, it's going to be all green. All green, and then you're not seeing any of the unsafe alleys. When it comes down to the recruitment, I think we talked about it. I wasn't here for the last CSEC, but we had 25 candidates that completed the interviews. We have three that either refused a job offer or they failed a background check. So that's three that we have there. Currently, we have eight employees that just or candidates that just started this week. They're in training for all this week, and then we're basically, teaching them the do's and don'ts, and get them on that truck. They're currently in class now. Next week we'll have an additional four that are going to be starting next week, going through the training, and then on 12, 15, the what is it, December 15th, we have one employee that already has a start date, so that's going to be one for the
Good.
December 15th. Six out of the 25 we have, six are that we're still waiting on documents that they haven't had a start date. So we do have six that, we're just waiting for documentation, whether it's going to be a driving record or background checks. Hopefully, if they can get that paperwork, we can get them in on the 15th. If not, it's, here come the holidays. It's going to set everything off. So we're probably going to get started here in January with another training class. And we do have three that are with the 25, three that are on standby. So basically, those standby, well, I don't want to call them standby, but I'll call it that way. What that is that we have three. So we have a couple of employees that are going to be retiring here pretty soon. So as soon as those PCNs open up, we'll be able to get those guys started here pretty soon also. For the ESWs, at the beginning we had 10 candidates that went through the interview process. One declined. Six are currently hired, and we have three that are on standby. If some of the guys that don't make it through the probationary we're gonna have those guys like on standby, so ready, to ask them or give them a job offer. Other than that, that was pretty much. It's nice and short. You guys have any questions?
How many total drivers do you have now?
Total drivers after these, I don't have that exact number.
Okay.
I don't have that exact number. I can get it for you guys on maybe on the next ESAC meeting. But with I'm not even counting these guys in, the ones that we have here, the eight, I don't have those on there, but we are short 25.
It sounds like you've moved people right along. I'm very impressed that you've got
Yeah.
these classes moving and people waiting, and it's really good to hear what you've done.
Yeah, we're in desperate need of, these employees. The employees that are, I mean, these candidates, employees that are here now, I mean, they've been working a lot of hours, putting in a lot of overtime, just because of what we've been short with employees. Hopefully with that, we get back, brush and bulky, get them back on track, residential, commercial. Hopefully we can get, once we get all the, we can get back on track. Now we're moving along with the trucks, So now it's just the employees. You know, hopefully they all make it through. We're gonna do everything that we can to, you know, to keep them. But you know, we'll see what the future lays.
Good news.
Good news.
It is. Thank you.
It's like, oh, you guys are probably all going, oh, it's about time. So
Yes.
the hiring process is better. Didn't they edit that from
My face is probably showing it's you know, to be honest with you, it is taking too long. You know, it is taking too long when, you know, when from the time they apply, from the time they get all the paperwork, the backgrounds, the physicals, the, you know, making sure that all the documents are in. Yeah, it does take. I mean, we would love to shorten it up because we had a lot of candidates that were, you know, that were waiting. They were just waiting for us. We did shorten it up from our last one, but we're trying to see what's, you know, how can we make this quicker? That's why when we have these candidates, you know, it's close to the holidays, we're like, just bring them in. You know, bring them in, you know, because here at work we do have to have trainers. You know, the employees that are with us now, we had to get trainers, and usually, you know, we'll have four or five that are training, but this go around is like, okay, they're ready, let's just bring them all in, bring them all in, so that way we can, you know, get moving on it. But we're working on it with HR, so we'll see what happens here in the future. Hopefully we can shorten up the process.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a couple of months.
Yes.
Well, thank you for the update. I'm
Thank
glad
you
things
guys.
are getting a little better for you guys. So,
Yes.
drivers and trucks, pretty basic,
Yes.
basic needs for ES. So.
Yes. But you know what? It's one of those things, even though that, yeah, we're shorthanded, and you know, with employees, the department always manages to get it done. You know,
Yes, they
whether
do.
it's a homeless camps, whether it's, you know, service, you know, sometimes we might have four or five routes down. You know, these guys will go out there and you know, have good teamwork where nothing stays behind. You know, nothing stays behind. So, you know, we're doing a good job of that. So I do go give kudos to the department for that.
Yeah,
Always,
hats off to management.
Yes, that's good management.
Yes.
Do you have any reports you wanted to make about cleaning up the where they're building the new bicycle park? I know that you got some front page press on going out there and cleaning up the homeless camps. You have any reports?
100 acres.
Yeah, you know,
Acres.
I can look up for the tonnages and everything that we pulled out of, but we do, you know, we had six crews out there, you know, and it took us 2 days.
Six crews.
Yes, we had six crews at one time, just trying to get everything cleaned up, you know, within the one day, but there was just too much stuff out there. I'm sure you guys seen it on the news of how much items were out there. But you know, the good thing is that, you know, we had Pima County, we had a couple, you know, they helped us out. They had skisters out there. We had Department of Transportation. They were out there with a couple of dump trucks. But I think the majority of everything that was taken care of was by our department. You know, like I said, we had, you know, six crews out there just knocking it out. We ended up doing 2 days, but everything was cleaned up. And
I
yeah.
was curious where'd everybody go? Did they have places
I'll
to put
tell you
them?
where they went.
Well, you know what? There was quite a bit of people that you know, that got the help. They did find housing, but the you know, there's always those few that don't want the help. You know, so where exactly they went, you know, it's hard to say.
I have a lot by my house,
They've
so
spread throughout the community. We have them at our church property. We
yeah,
had
kind
it
of
all
scattered, huh?
quiet for a while, and now it's all picked up again.
Yeah, and Speedway's a real mess.
Yeah,
So.
and that's one of those things, you know, if you ever just see a homeless camp that's, you know, that is beginning to build up, or if they have a camp, you know, either you can report it to 311 or get a hold of one of us, you know, because we do have to follow the homeless protocol, and you know, don't hesitate to, you know, to let us know.
Is that on both private and public property?
Is that in the city limits? Yes.
As long as it's in the city limits, okay.
Yeah, and we do
work with Pima County, there are sometimes where they need help because they don't have the equipment like we do. So, sometimes we do go off, but it's a joint effort. We help each other out. So once in a while, they need our help, like on the Santa Cruz River. There are a lot of homeless camps there. Sometimes we'll do a joint effort and we'll help each other out, just to get it cleaned up.
Good to know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. Let's go on to future agenda items.
I'm sorry I was late. Chris, what did you do about the letter for
I'm
support?
working on it, but nobody has sent me anything, so.
Well, to me, I know we got the note from Brittany, and I was a little unclear how we should work on that.
Well, I'm gonna have something that I'll send out that Brittany can send out, but I was
Okay.
kind of hoping, some people would have some things that they would want me to say to add to it. I just wanted to make sure everybody's involved, since
Okay,
it's
well, I'll
coming
try to.
from ESAC. So I mean, there'll be something that we can vote on at the full ESAC
At the meeting.
meeting,
Okay.
right? Right.
All
So,
right.
vote on it, and maybe come up with corrections or whatever, but it'd be nice to get a heads up. So
So
it's
my.
gonna be just, front and back page. We did
Yeah,
have to.
Max, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So what you're looking for us is for some of the reasons, some of the work, some of the why we think it's a good idea, the kind of discussion that went into it. So that
Right.
one
Well, the people I'd
contribution.
like to hear from the people that wanted to have the small barrels, for zero waste, kind of chime in and say what they're thinking,
Okay.
and
All right, well, I can do that. I
because
can
it
work on that.
always ends up just being a few of us, cranking
Well,
it out. So I
that's
wanted to
alive.
like open it up. That's what I want. If people want to contribute and have some issues and really want something in the letter that they think is really important that the city manager and mayor and council should know about, and that's will help out ES getting the funding that they need. So that's what we're doing, is trying to get them the money they need to try to do everything that's been dropped on their shoulders. So
Okay.
it keeps coming. So,
And Pat, you commented briefly that all four agencies are going together at the same time. What was the thinking of that? That kind of bothers me. Is he
it's
off?
just that they I think they just wanted to get the memo out to all. That's always made us all nervous when you put all the rates together.
At once.
That was just the mindset that Tim wanted to put that out there and get the memo out to all of them. I think they're all aware of it anyways, because we've kind of all touched base, so it's not really a surprise. But understanding where your question, because I think we always get concerned that when it comes to residents, water increase, ES increase, sewer increase, Navajo County is going to do some increases, and Parks and Recs, and they're like, wait a minute, are we putting too much? And it tends to
Oh
always
yeah.
makes us nervous because ES always tends to be put on the hold list and say, well, wait a minute, we need to do these others first. But I don't know. I wish I had a solid answer for you right now that
Yeah,
makes me feel
okay.
good about it. But the decision was, let's just put it all together and at least get the memo out there, and it'll lead to further discussions.
I can just see the press getting a hold of it. That's what really concerns me, and adding all the numbers together and saying, oh, look, your costs are going to go up another 30%, 20%, something.
Well, and it's just real recent at the end of the year, because I was, because ESAC, we just didn't really know much about all the detail and stuff. So we sat down with finance, we knew there were problems, but
I'd say the positive one is it's get it out now and everyone, because I mean, obviously we don't have to finalize the finance report until March, January, February, March, April is really when we want to really get definite. Because by April, May, we started, if everyone gets an increase, then we need to start notifying residents and let them know. And we have to go out and do some neighborhood meetings as well. But if we're looking at the increase and getting on the commercial side, we have to give them anywhere between a 30 to a 60 day notice before rates change. So I guess let's get this one out on the 16th and see what the initial sticker shock is, and then we'll go from there.
As they say, run it up the flagpole and see who shoots.
Exactly.
And then, and that's when mayor and council are meeting. Are these all going to be in the study session?
Don't know. I
Increase.
wish I knew. Yeah.
Because I looked for the agenda and there isn't anything yet.
Well, it's quite a shock for the new council members. So there are two new people for whom it's going to be a real baptism by fire.
And that's true for the
So.
two, because we've already sat down with the other councils and have let them know, increases are coming and rates and all that kind. So we've given them, it shouldn't be a surprise to them
To
that
the
they're
existing ones, but the
to the
new
existing
ones
ones.
are, for the first time, they're going to have to look at the big picture. And water itself is complicated enough. I mean, and yes, is to some degree too now with all the smaller funds being involved and so forth and so on. All right, well,
My
we'll
only
see.
hope on that is that Karen does a good job of being to the transition and be able to share a lot of that information. The same with over here in Ward 5 as well.
Well, I guess
Okay.
we'll hear about it on the Oh, so it gets to them to the 16th, so they won't be talk. No, the meeting is on the 6th.
The
Yeah, the mayor and council, it goes
Mayor and
through mayor and
Council
council on the
will
16th.
meet on the 16th.
16th,
Okay.
For study session and stuff. So if there's something very dear to everybody's heart, write up something that you think helps emphasizes the importance. So.
I don't believe it'll be on consent agenda. I think it's going to be a part of the study session,
Yeah, I think
just
it'll only be
initially.
study
Yeah, it'll
session
be study.
because there's too much to discuss. I mean, that all four of them, each one is worth at least 45 minutes just going through them, explaining what it is and what the impacts are. And then by the time you get four, I mean, they're going to have their eyes glazed over. So,
Right.
I
Well,
mean,
so
really.
did you guys have to hustle getting the study done and everything? Because it kind of caught me off guard.
The study session, not on the study session. I mean,
No,
as far as the
the
cost of service study,
the cost of
the cost of service
service. I
study,
mean,
we've been
that
going
kind of
back and
just
forth.
came. All year we talked about issues and stuff, but then that all came like in what, November. So,
It just
okay.
came together then, yeah.
The cost of service study, we went back and forth with UGen, back and forth, back and forth. And the city manager had an opportunity that we actually showed them too. So they had questions and asked if we can tweak it and get a little bit more information.
Let
A
me call you
lot
back
of
in about
it
10 minutes.
compared to what our actuals are, which is always tough to compare actuals when you're looking at budget and then you're looking at forecasting over the next 5 years. That's always kind of a challenge. But that's what they've asked us to do. So we've done that to the best that we can to where we're at this point. I'm still answering a couple of questions that have been asked to me today that I'll hopefully have the response tomorrow. But there's only one or two that we're getting down to the nitty-gritty.
And the increase is gradual, and we're still cheap compared
Well,
to
I
other.
know,
But
when you
it's
compare to other cities, we're still fairly low.
that's fine. But it's still when you put all the numbers together, it doesn't feel cheap.
No, you're right.
That's what I'm
Right.
concerned about, is that it's going to be really hard. I'm not sure what Parks and Rec is talking about, what their pieces they're looking at.
Yeah, it's
All
always
right.
difficult because you're always going to hear, well, you got a lot of families that are on fixed incomes and trying to, get all these increases put through. I'm sure we're going to hear that on that
Oh
next
yeah,
meeting, at least.
it's gonna be bloody. all right,
Well,
sorry, I don't
all
mean to.
righty. Well,
For things
anyway.
on the for the next month's agenda, I guess I'm still interested in what happened to the solar panels from DM. Where did the solar panels go? Were they recycled or put into the landfill? I don't know that we've ever found out what the answer to that question was. And not only just DMs, but in as the earlier systems, what shall I say, mature, run out of steam, whatever. What are we going to do with all the old solar panels? Are we just going to chuck them into the landfill and cover them up, or is there some other process for them? So I'd like to see some sort of report on that.
Okay.
And what was I thinking? What
And I
else?
think a lot, and we did hear that a lot went back to the companies too. So, but all right.
And I guess, do we have an overall look at the zero waste? I mean, some people are doing dashboards and stuff. We have, this is how we're getting there, and this is where we're going faster, and this is where we're going slower. Or, I mean, it certainly is good news that our MRF is that people are being much more careful with where they throw.
Okay. Well,
And
we can have a conversation
about that.
about that too. So, anyhow, we probably should let everybody go home pretty soon here. So, we don't have a call to audience and item 11, and we're going to be adjourning at 4:38. Thank you, guys. We'll
Thank
see
you.
you
All
at
right. Thank you.
Foley,
Thank
Zach,
you.
and then
Thank
after
you.
that,
Bye. See you
bye.
next Thursday.
Holidays.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Not only in their own